With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
From Tally to Cali,
it's time
to wake up.
Wake up! Wake up!
Warchant.com is your ultimate Seminole sports source.
And this is Wake Up Warchant, presented by
Vitamin Energy.
Now here's Warchant.com's Aslan Hudjavandi
and Corey Clark.
Wake up! It's Wake Up Warchant, presented by Vitamin Energy. Coming up on today's show, heartbreak, hard luck, hallmarks of the Florida State baseball experience in Omaha at the College World Series once again. But we try to focus on the positive and the future. And we talk a bunch of football because we got a Renegade Express mailbag. We're generating discussion sparked by Cummins. Wake Up War Champ presented by Vitamin Energy. VitaminEnergy.com. Promo code WARCHANT BOGO. WARCHANT B-O-G-O. Vitamin Energy. Clinically tested. Clinically proven to not only improve your energy, but a plethora of things that make life better, giving you better mood, giving you better focus, giving you better immune response, better pump in the gym, all these sort of things that we all could use in our lives. Go to VitaminEnergy.com, Florida State alums behind this, hooking you up with that promo code WARCHAMPBOGO, WARCHAMP B-O-G-O. Try the variety pack. Try any of them. Can't go wrong. You can also find them in retail stores across the country, but you can't get them for free. You got to go to VitaminEnergy.com, use the promo code for that. WarChant.com, the ultimate Seminole sports source. Why don't you leave us a 5-star rating and review, please? Hit the thumbs up if you're on YouTube. Now, we'll read a review here in a few days, possibly, if somebody is so kind to go on there and just say something nice about Corey and I. But we get a lot of that everywhere else, so we won't give you too hard of a time, I bet, if you don't do that. Stumbling, bumbling already up the blocks, Corey. Pick me up. How are you, friend?
I'm good, buddy. I'd like to start the show by giving a shout-out to Brady Clark, who turned 16 years old today as you guys are listening to this show. He's 16 years, man. So it is crazy. Like, you'll see one of these days, Aslan, when your kids start growing up. But, like, I just told this story last week, how I was in the hospital with him when he had jaundice, like 2 days after he was born or 3 days after he was born, watching Georgia and Fresno State in the College World Series, and then calling and trying to get my buddy on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire movie edition. That's crazy. That was 16 years ago. It's just crazy. It's crazy that he's 16. It's just crazy. Like, he's,
you did it, Corey.
He's closer to almost middle age than he is to when he was born. Like, that's crazy, man. But yeah, he's 16. We did it. No worries now. It's clear sailing from here on out. I got him to 16. No, nothing to worry about anymore.
So you get him a Mercedes or a BMW?
Neither. He really wants my mom's, his grandmom's Volvo, which is a very nice car. But as my dad told me when I was 16, he's like, I am not getting you a nice car because you were going to wreck it.
Yep.
Now we hope it's a little like my wreck was I backed into a car in a gas station. And then I think I hit a mailbox or a fire extinguisher or something. Dumb stuff.
Right.
Like, we don't want serious accidents.
Yeah.
But all kids are going to bang up their cars.
Absolutely.
So he's getting his dad's 2017 Mazda.
Right. Yeah.
The one that got me the ticket where I almost went to jail for my license being suspended because I hadn't turned the tag of that in. He's going to be getting that in a couple of months.
All right. Stay on the straight and narrow there, Brady. But, yeah, it always blows my mind growing up, like, in a fairly affluent area, just seeing the amazing cars my friends had when they turned 16.
Makes no sense.
None. Especially the girls. Sorry, ladies.
Oh, boy.
Like, the cars y'all got. No, not saying. It's just like, they had, it's like, all right, so not only, Dad, are you giving your daughter this awesome car, which, like, now she's going to always want something this awesome her whole life. Which she cannot provide for herself now because she's a working woman and doing great in life. It's just like some of them is like, man, they're never, if a guy pulls up in a Honda Accord, good luck. Good luck. But yeah, my buddy had like an F Formula One Pontiac Firebird. I had a friend who had a Mercedes for his first car. It's like, God, I didn't get a car until I was like 18 and went off to college. 96 Corolla, baby. Love that call.
Nice. All right, good.
But I digress. I think we're in an okay mood, Corey. I think we're doing the show a little bit later than we do typically these days. We've processed probably the end of the Florida State baseball season, which came to a conclusion Wednesday afternoon in Omaha, Nebraska. 7-2 final against Tennessee. The Volunteers are number one overall seed in the country. They now head to the championship series, and it looks like it's going to be Texas A&M. If that falls through, I'll take it on the chin and apologize in advance, but they seem to be handling Florida okay-ish right now. So
you are just jinxing away. It's 5-0 in the eighth. Let's see how this bad boy – let's see by the end of the show where this score is.
Right. I find it almost disingenuous, Corey, for me to criticize anybody associated with this baseball program, even after they've lost a game. I said it on yesterday's show. I couldn't be more happy. I mean, obviously, if they won it all, I'd be more happy. But just, I know they left everything in the tank. I tweeted, saddened but not disappointed. They absolutely emptied every bit of the tank of a battered roster. Alignment from the administration with this coaching staff, and you've got one of the best. That is the coach. These trips will become commonplace again. They'll win the last game sooner rather than later. One of my best friends, who's so even-keeled, reasonable, pragmatic, says, I am really disappointed. The coaching cost us game one. And I'm like, man, have we not been paying attention? That's the thing. He hasn't been paying attention the entire year, where they came from, where they were, how they managed everything, whatever. Listen, Connor Whitaker, somebody pointed this out. I guess like every single batter, he got a home run hit off him in three different games.
Yes.
So who knows if Connor Whitaker would have been able to last the entire time out there. Packing that away, I can't sit here and criticize anybody, man. Cam Smith had a fantastic regional, maybe didn't do the best he wanted to do in Omaha. Samuel James Hibbs, but he did fantastic in the super regional. Jamie Arnold got you to this point. He didn't seemingly feel physically ready to go on Wednesday on what, 4 days rest? I don't think he's done that all year long. I'm not upset. I'll hold on to the fact that this coach put this team together in a blink of an eye, recognize these guys, develop these guys, and will be able to hopefully replicate something close to this. And you pointed out a few weeks ago, Corey, I'm sure people said the same things about like Mike Martin after 86. Like, oh man, we'll be back. We'll have this thing rolling. It's always going to be that way. I'm in that sort of mind frame right now, Corey. I believe so much in this coaching staff because of what they did. I guess we can get into the micro of what went wrong in this game, but I just feel so excited about the future that I won't be that down for that long because I just know they got everything they could. Everything they had in them, Corey, they left it out there, man. Now, what else can you really ask for?
Yeah, I think the way I look at it is, they blew the game on Friday night. They just blew it. And that is a game that will always haunt maybe not always. It'll definitely always haunt the guys on this team, certainly the ones that are leaving. Maybe it always haunts Link. Maybe he's got five national championships and it's an afterthought. But you win that game, you're in such a better position. But at the end of the day, even if you win that game, what kind of gives me solace a little bit is even if you win that game, well, you still got to beat Tennessee again, most likely. Mm. And that was not going to be easy, clearly. They are a loaded offense. They are a very good team. Again, their defense is a little leaky, apparently except in the outfield.
Sheesh.
They're all Willie Mays in the outfield, RIP. But that is a great baseball team, and you still – there was nothing guaranteed that you could beat them again. So it's not like you cost yourself a national championship with that loss. It made it almost impossible to do what you were wanting to do. And what I will lament too, man, is it's one thing if you just lose because they're the better team. And I thought even Friday night, because you blew a 3-run lead in the ninth, as we talked about, they kind of went and earned it. You didn't walk anybody. You didn't really make a ton of offensive mistakes at all. You put up 11 runs on one of the best pitching staffs in the country. You didn't make any errors, like legitimate errors defensively, although we could talk about Diamez Ross not making that play. But they kind of earned everything they got. On Wednesday, I just kind of felt like you gave away the game.
Yeah.
And it's not just, Abraham not having a good start, which he didn't. And that was not a surprise because I think he's got some good stuff, but he's never seemed comfortable this year. And most freshmen aren't, but he's never really seemed all that comfortable. He was thrust into a really hard position But walking the leadoff hitter, although the leadoff hitter is Barry Bonds with this team, you still walk the leadoff hitter, and it just went downhill from there. But, like, you know, why isn't Cantu off the base on that ground ball? That should have been a 3-6-3 double play, and maybe you are breathing a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, Cam Smith, maybe he turns that double play, maybe they don't. That's still going to be hard. This isn't the major leagues. 5-4-3s are not automatics. But he bobbles the ball. All the, those little things, and then the base running blunder, that's what you'll just never know. So you have second, third, nobody out with the literal heart of your order coming up. Like Cam Smith, James Tibbs, and Dingus coming up with second, third, nobody out, only down four. Cam Smith should have an RBI. That should be one out with a runner on third. It should be the same thing as a sack fly, a deep sack fly. He, you know, you want Cam Smith to split a gap because he's a first-round pick. He didn't play well in Omaha. But even still, he put the ball in play, and somehow, some way, Jackson West doesn't run when he should. And then he runs too late, but he has to run at that point because Max Williams gets the right read, and it's like, well, we're going on this. It's a high chopper over the pitcher's head. So instead, Jackson West gets thrown out at home. A horrible base running blunder. So it should be 4-1 runner at third with James Tibbs coming out with one out. In any ball that's hit anywhere close to hard, it's 4-2. It's a different game. The game just feels differently. But no, not only does Jackson West have a horrible base running mistake, don't forget Drew Ferreau getting thrown out by 30 feet at second, by the way, on the error. It's not an automatic turn and go. Like, he's played in that park long enough to know that there is some padding back there, and if it bounces hard enough, well, this is an automatic here. But he gets thrown out by 30 feet at second base, so whatever. And, of course, Jackson West gets a hit to start the next inning. But there's no guarantee he gets pitched to the same way if there's runners on first and third and two outs. So I'm not saying that. But that's a base running mistake. Then Jackson West has a base running error. Then Cam Smith and Max Williams both F up on the ground ball to first. Cam Smith can't run into that tag. He can't run into that tag. It's not a force out. If he makes him tag him, Aslan, Max Williams scores. If he just stops in the middle between first and second and the shortstop catches the ball and has to go run and tag him in the stomach, Max Williams scores. It's 4-1. Okay, at least you got something. You still don't feel great, but you're on the board. Instead, he runs right into the tag as Max Williams is loafing home. If Max Williams is sprinting home, thinking, I want to touch home before my teammate gets tagged because I know the rules of baseball, well, then it doesn't even matter that Cam Smith ran into the tag. But he screwed up too. So you had three of the worst base running mistakes they've made all season in the span of two pitches. And the point being, you can't beat good teams like that, man. And on top of that, I do think people probably don't want to hear it. I do think they were incredibly unlucky. They hit the tar out of the ball.
Oh, yeah.
They hit – Marco Dingus had three balls hit over 106 miles an hour, and he was 0 for 3. I mean, they hit the tar out of the ball. Jaime Ferrer had two balls hit over 105 miles an hour that were both outs. So Cam Smith in the last inning, when they had they kind of maybe had a shot to get back in it. Only 6-2, runner at first. Cam Smith hits the hardest hit ball he had all week, knocks the pitcher's glove off right to the second baseman for a double play that essentially ends the inning. So you got bad luck on top of not great plays, Cantu missing a pickoff that gives them a run. I just felt like this one, they didn't earn it as much as they earned it coming back on Friday night. But still, I think Tennessee's clearly the better team. They beat you 2-0. But the beauty of baseball is you don't have to be the most talented team to win. And Florida State, you know, had their chances in both of these games. So you always lament that. But yes, I don't want to touch too much on the bad stuff. I kind of went over all of it.
Golly, man. Yeah, you brought me down, champ.
The great stuff is where this program is. As somebody, I think Aaron Fitt, the guy, I guess I'm going to bring him up on every show. He called Florida State. He basically said Link Jarrett has Florida State back to being a superpower.
I agree.
And I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think that's what you see. I think that's why you can feel good about this team. I think that Link Jarrett is the reason you feel good about this program, because I don't think they're going away anytime soon.
No, I mean, that's everything what you said is fair. They, you know, you mentioned it ending yesterday's show just about, I mean, pretty much they had to play perfect and they played nowhere close to it.
Right. That's the problem, right? Yeah. You just wanted to see what it looked like if they played well.
Right.
If they played a typical Florida State game where the first baseman catches the ball and when they run the bases well. And they get good, you know, you get a little lucky, you keep getting unlucky with these hard hit balls. But if you get those two runs that you should have had in the third, then let's see how the game goes from there. It gets a little tighter for Tennessee. They never really felt any game pressure, and that's what's such a bummer.
Yeah, Jamie Arnold wasn't ready to go. We saw what Connor Whitaker looked like when he did come back into this game. So I don't really even know what they could have done. I mean, I guess you force Jamie Arnold. You tell me, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? You have no leverage on that kid. Like, go out there and pitch or else, like, what? Or else he'll put his name in the portal and every other program in the country will come begging for him to come to their campus. So, like, all of your only option was with John Abraham. But Brennan Oxford gets to leave with a good taste in his mouth.
Sure,
You know, I guess that doesn't matter a lot to maybe some people. But, like, a guy like Joe Charles that's played so much college baseball and talked about how much of a better human being he is now since day one arriving in Tallahassee, and how, like, Micah Posey, the absolute best coach he's ever had the pleasure of, like, being coached by. There's so much good stuff that, you know, some of these guys are going to be able to walk away from, and the guys that do come back are going to be able to build off of. The one thing I do wonder is somebody just kind of asked Link about what the feeling was like, and, you know, he kind of tapped into the Jimbo Fisher, like, man, it's hard to win, enjoy winning, and he talked about how hard it is to get to Omaha, which is what makes it so much – it makes it as equally difficult to walk off the field in Omaha when you come up short. And I'm like, man, I get that sentiment, but I'm more of the Aaron Fitt belief. I'm like, we'll be back, Link. And I don't think you want to maybe talk like that, I guess, Corey. Like, I've got faith. I'm going to keep us bringing us back left and right, and we're going to figure this thing out. But he was really introspective in that moment. I'm like, man, I just – don't talk like this is something that's only going to happen once every 5-7 years, Link. But I think they're closer to being a superpower, so I'll cling on to that.
They're not Tennessee necessarily, right? Like, Tennessee's been 3 of the last 4 years, right, to Omaha? And the one they weren't was the year Link beat them. Mm-hmm. They're always awesome. I think that Florida State, though, has a chance to be hosting regionals for the foreseeable future.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're hosting regionals, well, buddy, you got yourself a good chance. It's not easy. Like, we'll look back on this season 10 years from now, and I'm guilty of this because I do it all the time with the teams I covered 10, 12, 15 years ago. And you don't even really remember the two-run regional wins. You don't remember getting all you had to get out of Jamie Arnold or Brennan Oxford doing what he had to do in the regionals against UCF and Stetson. Mm. Like, those weren't easy wins. Obviously, the last win against UConn was not an easy win. It's hard. But the theory is you give yourself enough chances. You give yourself enough chances, you're going to get to Omaha. If you're in the Supers every year, you're going to get to Omaha 50-55% of the time. That you just will. And Florida State should be hosting a regional every year. They're not going to win them all. But I think with Link Jarrett as a head coach, they are a perennial regional host. And I don't want to say they're a perennial top 8 team, but they're always going to – I just feel they're going to be in the conversation.
I hate to use them as a comparison, but I just feel like if you look at what's happened down south, like 150 miles to the south, you know, east of us, that's the trajectory for this program now.
Yeah, you hope. That is a great program that he's got there. They did not have a very good year, obviously. They got to get in the tournament, and of course, because they have so much talent – they get in the tournament and get to Omaha, but we're one of the 4 teams left standing. But, you know, yeah, I think that's a goal. I think O'Sullivan's been to the College World Series 9 times.
Yeah, man.
In 17 years. He goes every other year. Right now, Link's on that same trajectory.
Yeah.
In fact, Link's been there 2 out of 3 last year at Notre Dame and then the this year. So Link is a very good coach, and this is going to be a very good program for a long time. But I think what will always sting is you really did have a chance on Friday night, man, and you'll just never know. It's not like that was the national championship game. I know I've said that before. This is not Arkansas dropping the pop-up. This is the first game, literally the second game of the entire tournament, but Florida State's first game. But you'll always wonder, okay, you win that game, you get to play, who would they have played?
North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, you showed what you could do against North Carolina. So you're the team that gets to be 2-0. and you're the team that gets to – Tennessee has to fight through to try to get back to you. And what does that look like? And you do have Jamie Arnold line up for one of those games, and you are in the driver's seat. Even if that happens, okay, go beat Texas A&M twice. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard. But you made it almost impossible by blowing the game on Friday night. But what can you do? He pitched his best arms. Literally, Arnold, Whitaker, and Oxford are the three best arms, other than Dorsey, the three best available arms for an opener. You lost it. They lost it. They gave up the runs. They gave up the hits. Check swing should have been called a strike. It wasn't. Understandably, that doesn't get called a strike a lot in that moment. But the coaching is like, what did he do wrong? What was he supposed to do? Yeah. He doesn't. The point being, the trust I have in Link Jarrett is this bullpen is going to be loaded next year. I just believe that.
Yeah.
He is going to go out and he's going to Billy Bean Moneyball this thing, because he's not going to be able to bid on the closer from Alabama or the closer from UCLA or somebody. But he is going to go Moneyball this thing and go find some really, really good pitching from other schools. And they are going to be a mutt. And, you know, they got unlucky with the Marlowe kid going down. I can never
Gavin
remember
Adams.
The. Yes, golly, I can never remember his name. 100-mile-an-hour guy. And then obviously Cam Leiter. They got unlucky with some pitching issues, with pitching injuries. But he is going to go out and replenish this bullpen. It ain't like he went up against Tennessee twice in Omaha and didn't understand the importance of bullpen depth. And loaded bullpen arms, right? Like, he saw it. He sees it firsthand. He needs more of that, and he knows it, and he's going to go get it. The beauty is that getting on this stage, becoming that superpower again, makes Florida State the enticing school that it used to be a few years ago. More enticing, man, honestly. Yeah. Probably more enticing than it's been since Buster was at Florida State. It's hard to articulate. But even when they were, like, I don't know, man. Nothing about this year and this postseason run seemed fluky.
Right.
I kind of felt like every time they did something good in the postseason or something good during the season, over the last decade, it was fluky.
Yeah, like post-Jameis, which is not, like, fair to use him as, like, the barometer, but I don't know, like, post-DJ Stewart.
Coinciding with DJ Stewart, like, man, they were a regional team. They were a regional host then. I just think that going back to 08 when they were great, and maybe, I guess, yeah, I guess 14, 13 or 14, they were number one or number two in the country for a good long portion. But since then, I don't know that it has not been on the same footing as some of these other schools. It hasn't been thought of the same way. They didn't play great fundamentally. They swung and missed a ton. They just weren't a great product, even though they still won some games. And in 17 and 19, they went on runs. They got lucky in 17, man, that Sam Houston State won that regional. They got lucky in 19 that they even got into the tournament and then went on that crazy run that came out of nowhere. But that wasn't a national championship team.
Right.
This feels like this felt like a national championship roster, quite frankly. And I feel like this wasn't fluky, and I think the decision makers around the country that run these travel ball programs are just parents that are looking at the product that's on the field, whether they're the parents of a 18-year-old kid or a 21-year-old kid that's looking for a final place to play. They look at Florida State as an absolute destination again. And so it's going to be this next couple of weeks, I think, is going to be really fun to see what exactly is out there in the portal and what they can get.
Let's get to the Renegade Express mailbag. Lots.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that was today.
Oh yeah, man.
Oh man, I wouldn't have gone on and on. Let's go. Let's go. Let's do it.
we got some football, a lot of baseball. We'll jump into some of these baseball ones. Seminole Life, I think our winner from last week of the generating discussion sparked by Cummins. Wake up, fellas. If you're the manager of the 24 baseball team, do you pull Whitaker in game one against Tennessee after that warning track ball? I get both were hit hard, but honestly, that should have been the second out. Personally, I leave him in there to finish the bottom of their lineup. Go Noles. I said it in the group text. Like I wanted him pulled, so I can't armchair it. Nope.
So he had, I think he struck out in the side in the seventh, But when he came in the sixth, he gave up the longest home run that's been hit in the whole tournament to Christian Moore, right? The one that dead center. Wasn't that Whitaker that gave that up?
That was in the sixth?
I thought maybe that was the seventh. I know he struck out the side. Maybe he struck out the side in the seventh and still gave up that long home run. I thought one of the first batters he faced hit a home run off him. Either way, he gave up a 440-foot home run to dead center.
Sixth inning, you're right.
So it was, but then he came back and struck out the side. He gave up a run in the eighth. And then the first batter of the ninth with a three-run lead, he gives a ball that's hit 2 feet from being a home run. Yes, it could have and should have been caught, and clearly the Tennessee center fielder would have caught it because he caught the same type of ball on Wednesday. Maybe a harder play, honestly, because it, he had to run. He had to angle towards it. But you give up a ball that's hit off the wall and then a ball that's hit almost off the wall in successive batters, and you weren't going to John Abraham in that moment. You were going to your best guy. And I think in that moment, you think, okay, they've seen Whitaker. They've all seen Whitaker once. He's getting to these guys for a second time. Oxford is our best guy. He's been our best guy all year. He's going to throw strikes. He is very tough to hit. He has been tough to hit all year. And look, man, I think those are the kind of decisions that, like, if you leave them in too long, you're like, why didn't I go to Ox? I think you err on the side of going with your best guy in that moment. It's two out. It's one out. Nobody on. So he gets to come in with no traffic. And you just say, get me two outs. You've been our best guy all year. And Tennessee didn't let it happen. But I don't mind the decision. I really don't. That's been your guy. Whitaker had given you all he could. But it wasn't like he was missing a ton of barrels. It wasn't like he was kind of dominant and then just gave up one hard-hit ball. This was – it felt like the second time through the lineup, they and you didn't want him to pitch to Christian Moore again after what had happened to his last ball that he had thrown to Christian Moore.
And I know Link Jarrett's not Mike Norvell, but I don't know what the injury policy is. But just at some point, we're all going to find out just what Connor Whitaker was dealing with this entire year, and – maybe some of that will make a little bit more sense.
That's another thing I'd like to bring up. Like, Whitaker pitched through some stuff that might have – we don't know if it ends up hurting his pro prospects or his pro career, but he fought back not caring about it. Like, he wanted to pitch for this team, not caring what it meant for his future. And I don't know what his major league future, his professional future was going to be.
But he's got to have he's got to at least have a chance at it.
I would think. He throws 93 with sink. Yeah. Like, he's got some good stuff. He's not a first rounder. No. He's not a surefire major leaguer, but he's got some stuff. But he fought back and pitched through pain and rehabbed to help this team win. And it is cool that he got to pitch on that stage. It is cool that I guess he technically didn't pitch terribly against Tennessee the first time around. So I don't want that to be lost, that he gave up some home runs. But, you know, I think Link was thinking, this is my guy that's been closing it out. This is not something we've been using Whitaker for a lot. And he's given us absolutely all he can. And it turned out, it couldn't have gone worse. In hindsight, yeah, let Whitaker pitch. Let Cam Leiter pitch. Let Cam Smith pitch. Like, it couldn't have gone worse than it did the ninth inning against Tennessee.
Our guy Dalvinism, wake up. Let's say Florida State ends up in the Big Ten. How does that affect the baseball program? Is the much easier schedule a golden ticket to a national seed every year, or will playing a non-elite conference schedule be damaging to the program? Thoughts? It's a good question. I mean, the only thing I can think of is RPI, obviously, right? That's the only thing that's just glaring at you, your face.
Yeah, but you can fix that through
midweekers.
Midweek, well, just our non-conference. Like, I would think if you're playing in the Big Ten, then you're scheduling Oregon State for a non-conference series. Instead of scheduling Butler, you schedule Oklahoma. You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah, right.
I think that's what you do if you're playing in the Big Ten. And even if you start 3-7, but you've played some good opponents, that's only going to help your RPI as you stack up wins against Indiana and Minnesota and whoever else you play in the Big Ten. I assume those have – well, I know Indiana has a baseball program. I assume Minnesota does too. But I think that's what you would do. But yeah, it certainly, I don't, it will be harder. The path there is harder because you don't have, you just don't have the pathway to get a lot of good RPI wins after the middle of March. You know, so that's the issue there if you're in the Big Ten.
We'll go to our guy, Gator Kirk. Wake up. When do baseball recruits sign for next year, given that 2 through 6 may be gone? Who is going to replace them offensively and maybe to a lesser extent defensively? Go Noles.
Yeah, well, the recruits have already signed that'll be on this team, the freshmen anyway, and the JUCO kids. But the portal is open. So that, I don't know when it closes, but it is wide open right now. I know LSU got to commit on Wednesday from, I don't remember, somebody that was good, as you can imagine, somebody that had big numbers somewhere. And then Purdue had a kid.
Yes.
Did we talk about that kid? Did they play Purdue this year?
No.
I thought they played him like in that South Carolina tournament. No,
that was
the
preseason. They played like Michigan State, maybe Illinois.
Oh, okay.
I forgot the
other. I don't know why I knew about this Purdue kid, but I did. I don't know why.
He's got really good stats.
It's crazy how good those stats are. Yeah. So he's in the portal. He's a catcher / first baseman, and you might need both. Maybe they make a run at him. If you're replacing 2 through 6, and I do think at least now, I could be wrong. This is nothing guaranteed. I think Marco Dingus is staying. So I think you have him to go along with Max Williams. But, yeah, you have to assume that Cam Smith obviously is gone. James Tibbs is gone. Ferrer is probably gone. Cantu is gone. So I just named 4 of your top 6 bats are gone. And you got to go replace them. So those will be almost certainly with portal kids, with the exception of Cal Fisher, who is on the roster now, who played a good bit this season, who we think will be in the lineup somewhere, whether it's second or third, he is going to be in the lineup in some capacity next year. But all those other guys, probably going to be portal guys.
And
maybe Diomez Ross. Maybe Ross is back in the lineup next year.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Lodis, he shows some pop in Omaha.
No, I wasn't including him. I was including just 2 through 6.
Oh, right.
Like Lodis and Faroe were back. Jackson West is back. So those guys. Lodis, by the way, man, kudos to that kid. He came on. He had there were times where I was like, he swung and missed too much. It wasn't all that fun to watch his at-bats. But he hit 2 home runs in Omaha. He made every play he was supposed to make. He was solid defensively. That's a nice bat to have in your lineup. He's not a superstar. But I like that bat in the 6 or 7 hole next year to go along with what is the most important from a shortstop, really solid defense. That's a good guy to have in the lineup.
Tennis ump, I think this is kind of a little bit timely had they won the game, but when the baseball team goes on and wins the College World Series, how would that rank among the pantheon of great FSU wins? Would it compare with the Miracle on Ice? Yeah, if they would have gone 0-1 and then come back and beat Tennessee twice and then like lost the opener against A&M and then beat them twice, maybe we could have got Al Michaels on the program to talk a little bit about it. But I don't know. So I don't know where I'm at now, Corey. Maybe, you know, I wonder if I want them just to run roughshod and just go, you know, 3-0 in the regional, 2-0 in the super, and then win like 5-0 in Omaha, or if I want to be put through the. I think I want to be put through the meat grinder, Corey. Like I think I'm going to want to sweat it out and curse and almost want to cry. And when it happens, I still think I'm going to be very, very happy. I know that's not maybe the strongest adjective, but it's a good feeling. I think I'll be very much of it.
Hopefully. You know what I'm going to throw out there? I don't know what the guaranteed contracts are of like the number 17 pick in the MLB draft. I assume it's like $4 million. And then Tibbs, so those two guys, Cam Smith and Tibbs, are probably in the neighborhood of $4 to $5 million, I think. $3 to $5 million, somewhere in there. Ferrer is not a first-round pick, but, man, can that kid hit.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's a top 5-round pick. That's probably $500,000. And then who else are you looking at? Those three in particular. Yeah. What's Bill Smith. Come on, man. Like those, especially Cam Smith, he's only a sophomore. He's not losing any leverage at all. But let's get the band back together.
Oh, man.
Imagine the hype around this team if the entire lineup came back. minus Cantu. And you'll probably be able to get a first baseman once. Remember when we were talking? I think we talked about it. Like Tommy White didn't want to come to Florida State necessarily because who was going to hit around him? And so even though he's a Florida kid, he went to LSU because, I mean, he had Dylan Cruz around him and he had other guys that were going to – and he won a World Series, so good for him. But imagine trying to go get a first baseman in this market if Tibbs, Smith, Dingus, and Ferrer are all there in the lineup with you. Come on, man. So make it all happen. Those guys can all go be major leaguers in a couple years. You're not really delaying their growth at all. They're not delaying their earning potential. But I was just thinking about that as watching that because it was 3.5. Tennessee got on the board so quickly, and it looked so gross right away that you immediately start thinking about next year. And I'm like, man, if Cam Smith and Ferrer – obviously Tibbs isn't coming back because he's a junior. But Ferrer could maybe up his stock if he played the outfield a bit better, got to be a good left fielder, not just a serviceable left fielder, but a good one, what that could do for his stock. Maybe the number one team in the country, perhaps. It'd be cool. It'd be cool to cover a team like that. But, I mean, I know they're all going. It's college baseball. But you allow yourself to dream a little bit. And it would be cool if they turn into that. But, yes, if they would have come back and won after – if they'd have won six games in a row after that heartache on Friday night, that I would have equated that to the Miracle on Ice.
A little bit nervous when you see the folks that work for the collective that handles the baseball side of things telling you to buy merchandise that's branded pretty much for Max Williams that says Money Max and there's $100 bills all over the t-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah, well, right.
Don't go, Max. You're back home, buddy. You're back home.
By the way, that guy's great. He had three hits on Wednesday, a double down the line that really should have been in the what sparked that rally. It just well, his base running was part of it, but the base running fiasco after that. But man, and then he's good, man. He is good. I do think this was his first year really playing college baseball. He was at Alabama the year before. He didn't get a ton of at bats. That guy's a star. That guy's going to be your three hole hitter next year. He's going to be the James Tibbs of that team next year. He's really good. He barrels it up more than James Tibbs. Honestly, he hits the ball consistently harder. Him and Dingus. And theoretically, both those guys are back. That's a good way to start because those guys barrel the ball more than any duo that Florida State has had in a long, long time.
Blue Knoll, good morning. Wake up. Wanted to ask about bunting. Is it a thing anymore in college baseball? Has it gone the way of punting on fourth and short? Don't see much of it anymore in places where it used to be obvious. For example, versus North Carolina Tuesday, runners first and second, nobody out, looking for some insurance runs. Seemed like the ideal spot to move guys over. Instead, Jaime came to the plate, and I know he's been having a great series. He pops up, next batter. He says Lodies, but I think that would be Cantu. Hits a deep fly ball that surely would have brought in a runner from third if he'd been bunted over previously. Is it a philosophical thing, analytics, or just not a winning play anymore? What do you say in this matter? Thanks.
So I like that he asked that because I had a theory that – when was it? So first and second – no, it was runner on – that eighth inning when it was a runner on first and Cam Smith was up. And, of course, the deflection goes right to a double play. Let's say that ball does not hit the pitcher's glove and goes into center field. It's first and second, nobody out with Tibbs up, down by four. In my head, and I could be completely wrong, I think there's a 50% chance Tibbs bunts there for a base hit.
Oh, you know what I mean? Shift or something?
Yes, correct. Because it ain't like he can hit a grand slam with two guys on base. You need base runners. You need to put real pressure on that team. He ain't swinging it well, and it was a tough lefty. To me, and you got Dingus and Ferrer right behind you. To me, that is a time that you try to bunt. And I will say this about Florida State. They don't bunt a lot, but they bunt more than most teams you watch.
Yes.
And Lodies seemed pretty good at it this year. Cantu bunt had some sack bunts this year. But in that instance you're talking about, no, you don't you don't have Jaime bunt in that spot. I don't remember the exact situation, but essentially – let's say it's a righty on the mound. If he does his job and bunts him to second, third, well, Cantu's not gonna. They're gonna walk him. So that sack fly is that fly ball you're talking about is irrelevant because I don't think they pitch to him. They try to set up the double play. So you have the bases loaded with one out with Lodice up. or you have first and second, nobody out, with your best hitter up. So do you take the your best hitter's swing away? Do you take the bat out of his hands to get the bases loaded for your seventh best hitter? That those are the things that those are the things that you have to ask yourself. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, because I agree with you. I'm all about bunting for insurance runs more than I'm about bunting to like tie the game.
Right.
I'm all about adding on any way you can, putting pressure on the D. But Jaime Ferrer, I don't think has ever been asked to bunt. And in the College World Series, when he's already hit three home runs and driven in nine, I don't necessarily think that's the time to do it. But I understand the question. But yes, by and large, bunting, especially at the major league level, is non-existent. But even at the college level, it's disappeared to a large degree. But Florida State did. Usually it's first and second, nobody out, is when Link will bunt. Yeah. Get that runner, get those runners to second, third, put the pressure on the defense, and you know, hard contact gets you a run or two. So yeah, I agree with you. I'd like to see a little more bunting, but I just don't think it's what the analytics say to do most of the time.
Last couple when it comes to baseball. Walking Nola 1, gentlemen, Tuesday, one earbud, was listening to the court session, had my phone on my desk watching baseball without volume. I had to keep reminding myself that as fun as baseball was, the court proceedings were more important. Mm. Florida State Law School needs to give a class credit to the people who tuned into the court proceedings. I feel like I learned a ton from it. Question. When will they announce National Coach of the Year in baseball? Surely Link has that award locked up, right? P.S. R.I.P. Harambe. Thanks for all you do. Go Noles.
There you go. Long live Harambe. I don't know how that works. He didn't win ACC Coach of the Year, did he?
I don't know. Have they announced that one?
Yeah, they announced the ACC. Forbes? They gave I don't think they even gave it to Forbes. Maybe they did because he won. And I'm all about that typically. Or North Carolina won the league during the regular season. But Tibbs was the ACC Player of the Year. So, yeah, they announced all the awards. Link didn't win ACC Coach of the Year. So he's probably not going to win National
Forbes
Coach
did.
Of the Year.
Yeah, Forbes won it. Yeah.
But, yeah, if you're looking – I think what hurts him, honestly, is the name, right? Like, it's not like he took Boston College from a 23-win team to the Omaha. Right. He took Florida State. Like, Florida State's name kind of rings out in baseball. So, you know, that's you don't get the benefit of the doubt a lot that you had a big turnaround season at Florida State because it's Florida State. So I would be very surprised if he wins National Coach of the Year. But he is a great college baseball coach.
And then our guy Dave, Bartown, Kentucky.
Florida did lose, by the way, 6-0. So their season is done as well.
Perfect timing. To my wife, the University of Kentucky graduate, thanks for nothing.
Yeah, right?
Shout out to A&M, though, for taking care of business.
6-0, man. So do you think – so look, the two teams left standing are A&M and Tennessee. And the strength – well, Tennessee hits more – Tennessee's offense is crazy. But – they
By the
have
way,
a,
Kentucky's coach won the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association Coach of the Year Award 5 days ago.
All right. Okay. I mean, I would say Link did a better turnaround job, but, you know, it is Kentucky. They've never been to the College World Series before, so that's great. Tennessee and A&M have great pitching staffs. They have very good bullpens.
Well, so they have Florida a bunch State of, when they were whole. But I
No, that's sorry. What I'm saying. But I don't know if you wouldn't say that they had a great bullpen. And I
but
wonder,
if you had Dorsey, like Dorsey and Whitaker, kind of one of those.
But
guys
one of them been, is starting, right?
Yeah, but so, the other guy's like an absolute bulk arm to the nth degree, you know?
Yeah, and that's my point that I was getting to. Let me talk, Aslan, because I never get to talk on this show.
You're right.
I don't understand. It's just the Aslan show these days. No, but I was going to say is I wonder if you look at how Tennessee is structured, how A&M is structured, where their best arms are their bullpen arms, and it's I'm not in the mindset that you need openers. They just want to go through a whole season with openers. But if you get six dependable bullpen arms, six to seven guys that you feel good about, like the equivalent of Whitaker and Dorsey and Joe Charles on Wednesday, not Joe Charles for the whole season, right. But what Joe Charles was on Wednesday, what Holtz was on Tuesday. If those were the guys they were all season, maybe that's a better idea for Omaha and really for the postseason or just for baseball in general, the way it's being played, college baseball, to care more about the bullpen arms than having two really good starting pitchers, especially when you get to Omaha because you need those arms. Like, I wonder if he structures the staff a little differently. Is that like the trend of where college baseball is going? Because he's usually, I think he's one of those guys that's kind of on the forefront of the new trends and the new thinking. And I wonder if the new thinking is, okay, that's awesome that Jamie Arnold gave you 6 1/3 on Friday, but wouldn't it be cool if he gave you 2 on Friday and 3 on Sunday and helped you win 2 games as opposed to 1? You know what I mean? I wonder if that's something that he might be thinking about as he structures this roster moving forward. Is this the new wave of college baseball, is to have most of your arms be the bullpen guys, your dependable arms?
He was asked about the difference between this Tennessee team and the team that he beat in 22 in the Super Regional. And he did say it felt like they had like really strong frontline guys in 2022, and then they kind of pieced it together on the back end to figure it out. But obviously that's not the case anymore. Just like they have so many options that can keep going to the bullpen and throwing at you. Yeah. And he almost kind of said it like in an envious, little bit of a tone. So maybe there is some thinking in that regard, Corey, of him kind of reassessing what the right mixture of it is. But
think about that Tennessee team. One of those guys that they used to like piece it together at the end was Chase Burns. I mean, good grief. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Real quick, before we talk about the awesomeness that is the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, let me give you a minute. Do you want to talk about, you figured it out, your new College World Series format?
Yeah. So, and I say this because it used to be the Major League Baseball draft would happen like during the Super Regionals,
right,
or the Regionals. Like, that's when the draft would be. I remember specifically for years.
Supers. It was during Supers.
Was it Supers? Yeah. I just remember covering, but it would be before Supers. It'd be like the Wednesday before. So I'd be covering a practice, and then you'd hear me curse from the locker room because he had just one of his signees had just been drafted too high, and he knew he wasn't coming to college. But you'd hear that a lot. Like, these guys were getting drafted. I remember Eli Villanueva, I'm almost positive, got drafted while he was pitching in a Super Regional game back in one of Buster's years, 08, I think. So – but that's not the case anymore. The Major League Baseball draft is not in early June. It's in, like, middle or late July. They pushed it back to coincide with the All-Star break for Major League Baseball. So, with that said, there's no real rush to go through, to get through the end of the college baseball season. There's nothing else to watch. Who cares? So, my thought was, and I guess Ira had it first, but who knows. But I do think they should go, and I say this, obviously, as somebody that would like Florida State to win this stupid tournament, and it never does. But it should have been Tennessee versus Florida State, best 2 out of 3 to start in Omaha. Not you lose and you go play another team. It's Tennessee versus Florida State, best 2 out of 3. Whoever wins that plays whoever wins the NC North Carolina Virginia series. And you just – so you're but the only way you can do that is like they did on Tuesday – or sorry, Wednesday because of the rain, you have 3 games a day. Have 3 games a day, so there's going to be 4 series going on simultaneously in the College World Series. 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, 3, 6, 4, 5. And one of the series gets a day off per day. But, like, the first day is 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, and 3, 6, and 4, 5 doesn't play that day. But either way, you play that's what baseball is supposed to be. It's the best 2 out of 3. It's a series. Like I said and lamented yesterday's show, Tennessee is now going to wait till Saturday to play Texas A&M. They will play – I guess A&M's the same boat.
Yep, yep,
the
yep.
Two teams are going to play on Saturday. They played 3 games in 8 days. It's just not what baseball is. They both played 3 games in a week. This is a daily game. So it's just – it's the only sport where – like football is this – you play one team a week, and that's how the schedule works. Basketball – You play a team. You beat them, you play another team. That's how the sport works. In baseball, you play series. You play series. You know, you had to play a Super Regional. You had to play a team and beat them 2 out of 3 times. And then all of a sudden it switches to this goofy format that isn't anything like the regular season. And it would be cool, like they do in the major leagues, to keep it like it is during the regular season where it's a series. And it would just be – I think that would be – who's going to be complaining because there's more baseball games? It would probably be, I don't know, 5, 6, 8 more baseball games, and it would be 3 games a day. I don't think anybody would be complaining about that. But I just think that's more in line with the nature of the sport itself. Baseball is not supposed to be a game you play once every 3 days, which is what Tennessee and A&M have done since they've been out in Omaha. And credit to them, they're taking advantage of the way it works. They're winning their games. But it's just – it would be a lot cooler if Tennessee and Florida State played a best two out of three. And look, Florida State would have been swept. Oh, and they're done.
We're going to reseed it, though, right? We're going to reseed when we get to Omaha. So they would not have played Tennessee.
So they would have played who? Virginia, maybe?
Sounds like, sure.
Yeah, probably, because Virginia was the lowest seeded team that's out there. Yeah, I think that's fair. I would reseed too. So then, like, the reason you'd reseed is because you wouldn't want the number two team. Like, let's say the number three team gets to play, I don't know, man, some three seed that stormed, like
Evansville.
Stony Brook. Like Stony Brook ten years ago against LSU when they beat LSU. Like, you know, you got to go play Stony Brook. Meanwhile, the one seed has to play Florida State. But the three seed, who had a much worse season, or at least a worse season, is at the one seed, gets to play Stony Brook. No. The one seed gets to play Stony Brook. Everybody else figure out who you're playing. So, yeah, I think you reseed it. And I just think the sport itself needs to be – it would be cool if they made it these series, like real series. Because, again, I will always go back to Florida State in a must-win game to try to get to a national championship series, started John Abraham, a kid that hadn't pitched since June 2nd. And the day before, they started Andrew Armstrong, who couldn't get Brady's 15U team out for a long stretch there for a while and was awesome in Omaha, pitched his tail off and pitched through pain. I was also thinking, like, maybe it would have behooved him to throw a little slower this year. Now, and I'm being honest, like, him throwing 86 instead of 91?
Yeah.
Those guys aren't used to hitting 86. All these guys are dialed up to hit mid-90s. So 86 gets them a little off balance, and I think that actually worked in his favor, being a few ticks down on the radar gun. But like you, with your season on the line, and it wasn't. And I guess my biggest issue, it's not like Florida State played bad out there. They lost a one-run game to the number one seed, then won two games, and yet they're still in the position where they have to start a true freshman who hasn't started all year because of the format of the event. That doesn't seem to be in tune with figuring out who the best team in the country really is. It's who's, you know, got the best injury luck or pitching luck or luck in general or third base umpires, whatever. Anyway,
I remember
just my thought. It's too long.
I remember covering the 13 College World Series, Mississippi State, and they one of their guys got drafted on the plane ride out to Omaha. And I always remember Dansby Swanson got drafted as he was doing a post-game interview in the 2015 draft, which was June 8th. And on June 8th, they beat Illinois in the second game of their Super Regional to make it to Omaha. So they dogpiled him. They put a headset on. And as they're interviewing him, they're like, also, by the way, you just got – I think they had on the scoreboard behind him the MLB draft. And yeah. ESPN was interviewing him. Like, oh, you want to turn around and see if you're going to get drafted number one? And like he did, and then they asked him about that too. So that's when it used to be held.
That's weird, right?
Yeah, a little bit, but they got it figured out, so maybe they'll listen to this
show.
Well,
that's why I really do. I would love them. Nobody's going to complain about too many games in Omaha.
Right.
Or instead of being a week and a half, I mean, Ira might, but instead of being a week and a half, it's 2.5 weeks or whatever it has to be. I just think that's better for the sport, and I think that's a better way to determine a real champion. That said, Tennessee's the best team in the country, and they deserve to be where they are. I'm not taking anything away from that. I don't think it plays out any differently if that is a best two out of three series. Florida State still has to win that game when they're up 11-8 in the ninth. I just think moving forward, it's better for the sport.
Somebody sent me this email, and sometimes I feel like people just hop on the Noel fan, and then they look at stats, and then they come back and they try to correct us. But this person says, Aslan, the 1970 FSU baseball team was the best. They won the first two games. They finished 4-2. They beat Arizona, Ohio, Dartmouth, and Texas 11-2. They lost to Southern Cal in the first of their five straight national championships. Southern Cal had actually come back from losing their first game. We lost 2-1 in 15 innings on an infield error.
Yeah.
By the way, there's always been eight teams at Omaha. Love you and Corey on Wake Up. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. And their signature is there. Apparently they were an actual FSU baseball letterman in 1972 and 73.
So, oh, okay. All right.
So they know. So appreciate that note. Appreciate you folks checking out ViaAmerica.com as well as Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, cptallybar.com, the website, 2475 Appalachia Parkway. Daily lunch specials from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. for only $8.99. Today, cheesesteak sandwich, chicken or steak, your choice, as well as a side dish for only $8.99. And then bingo, 7 o'clock, Corey?
Yeah, 7 okay. o'clock, $250 each round, not just total, each round.
Yeah, do it. Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, 2475 Appalachie Parkway. All right, back at it. Second part of the show. Maybe some would say the more popular part of the show. It's the football segment, but I think I'm ready to talk about football now. Maybe another day I'll really be, but for the time being, let's get to it. Sat B. Knoll, who will be quarterback two by midseason? And if Luke Kromenhoek passes up Brock, does Brock stick around or hit the portal? Oh, now we're right back into football. We're right into it.
Let's do it, man. It's football season now. It's officially football season. No, I mean, it's 2024, man. If Brock Glenn gets passed up by a guy that's younger than him, he's going in the portal. While he's not sticking around, I mean, that's just – and I'm not – that's no discredit to Brock. That's just – that's what people do. That's what everybody does. He's not going to stick around.
AJ Duffy did. Yeah, so
– just what happens. It's just how life works. So, no, if he gets passed up, he's leaving.
When's the last time somebody got passed up midseason for, like, a backup job, though? I hate to spring that on you, and it's almost rhetorical more than anything, but it's just –
you mean for Florida State?
Yeah, or – I mean, I can't even think of any other team that you're like, oh, that's like their – that's their number two quarterback, and then all of a sudden, in week eight, you hear some other name. You're like, why is that guy starting for them now? And it's like, oh, well, he passed up their second stringer. It's usually like, well, both those two guys went down, and that's how the third string guy ends up playing in week eight. It's not because he starts having much better practices in season. So, I mean, and that's the thing too, right? Like, during the season, they don't really baby the ones. I mean, they're taking a lot of reps. They're doing a lot of one-on-ones. They're doing a lot of 11-11 team sort of stuff. So there's very, at least when we're out there watching practice, I know we don't get to see all the days during the football season, but it doesn't know there's a lot of runway, you know, to get your DRS up, if we want to use an F1 analogy, and like get some wind behind your sails and push past the number two quarterback. So I don't know how likely that is to happen, but we'll see how it goes. Let's keep it quarterback related here, Corey. Our guy SPM Jab: for the sake of discussion, let's say the snub doesn't happen. Florida State makes it to the playoff. In that instance, I don't think Tate Rodemaker would have left yet. Let's say he has a game of his life, ends up staying. What does our quarterback room look like today in that instance?
Yeah, so no. I mean, how crazy would that have been if they're getting ready to play Michigan and Tate Rodemaker hits the portal? No, that would not have happened. He left because he didn't think he was going to be the starter next year, which he wouldn't have been because I guess he heard the rumblings. And then also he didn't want to play in that game either because I'm sure he saw what was coming. Why would I do this to myself?
I don't know, but Corey, what if they make the playoff?
No, that's what I'm saying. So if they make the playoff, he stays, clearly. Yeah. And if he has a good game, he's your starter.
This season, he's your 2024 starting quarterback.
Correct. Yeah, so – like, what? Let's just play it out. And this probably wasn't going to happen. But let's say he beats Michigan 31-26 and is, I don't know, 20 of 26 for 240 and a couple touchdowns. And then you make the national championship game. And whether he wins or loses, you now have a quarterback that's beaten Florida at Florida, mm-hmm. beaten Michigan in the Rose Bowl.
Beat Louisville in the ACC championship game, too.
Well, no, because that's in this scenario, he didn't play in that game. It's just talking about the snub.
Okay.
So Brock Glenn still played in that game because he got knocked out. So, but he comes back and beats Michigan, plays well, and then goes to the national championship game. I think you're riding with Rodemaker. Like, what would you have to see? He beat Florida at Florida, although the defense kind of won that game. And then if he played well against Michigan and then played well in the national championship game or played serviceable – yeah, it's a good question. I don't think that you – I think you might ride with him.
I think so. You feel really good about it. It's recency bias too, right? It's
like, was that part of the question though, right? Like if he played well
– yeah, has a game of his life.
Yes, then yes, he's the quarterback. Yeah. Yep, he's the quarterback at Florida State.
And I mean, and the quarterback room is still the same. It's Brock is probably number two and then Kromenhoek's number three.
Yes.
Right?
Yep. And DJ is – I don't know where DJ is. Miami?
Who knows?
I really don't know. I don't know where he'd be. Back at Clemson?
Let's go to Island Chief. Says, wake up. Last week, I said I was just going to enjoy the Knoll games in Omaha, not put myself through what I've done every year since my first year following the program along. 1980, 11's first year. Well, the first couple of innings in game one disavowed me of that notion, so I switched to listening to the game as called by Eric Llewellyn. No watching. Totally different experience. I was able to just enjoy the game again. Then I heard Corey describe some of the base running miscues of the North Carolina game that Lulu painted over in broad strokes as his choice, even though in my head, as I listened, I had expected the runners to have advanced. I'm thankful that he just leaves that sort of stuff out.
Right. Well, and that was a game they won. That was before the base running of Wednesday.
He gave us a choose-your-own-adventure, and we're going to take the second one because baseball is no longer playing, unfortunately.
Okay.
Hakeem Williams, if he finishes the season in the top five most impactful players, is Florida State in the semifinals?
Oh, geez. They're in the playoffs. I don't know if I'm going to say they're in the semifinals, but I that's too hard, man. It's just that's – I mean, I guess I should
just
play
along. Two wins?
And say, yeah. Or they might – one win. They might be a top eight team or top four team, and they only have to win once.
Because again, isn't it? Aren't the four highest ranked conference champions going to be the top four seeds? So even if you're,
oh, I don't know that that's true.
Yeah.
No way. So the AC. There's no way.
Let me confirm that one. Stand by, everybody. IT is going to get on this one. All right. Through the miracle of editing, we have confirmed that is the case. The four highest ranked conference champions will be seeded 1 through 4.
Well, I don't even understand. Well, there's only four conferences.
Well, say that to the Sun Belt, buddy.
That's what I'm saying. So you win the ACC, you get a bye? Is that what you're telling me? Because you can't have two teams from the SEC.
Well, because it's not Power Four conference. It's the highest ranked conference.
Right, but
yes.
Who would that be? Tulane's not going to be ranked ahead of Clemson.
Well, maybe if Clemson's got two losses and Tulane's undefeated, like a 2017 UCF kind of thing. Where
odds are, I guess, that Florida's. But even still, so you would have to win one game. If you win the ACC, you'd have to win one game to get to the national semifinals.
That really changes everything, Corey.
It does.
When
so
you think
I still,
about it, man,
I
know.
Still think that I'm not willing to say that guarantees they're going to win a playoff game or two. I think Hakeem Williams being a top five most impactful player on this team guarantees, in my opinion, guarantees they're in the playoffs. That's the ceiling I think that kid has.
Yeah, because I think, like, to contextualize it, you're almost saying he's going to have a Keon Coleman-esque season, right?
Correct. Yeah. Coming out of nowhere to go along with Malik Benson. Because the one thing you worry about with this offense is, are you going to have dynamic receivers out wide? Are you going to be able to make plays out wide with a quarterback that isn't as good as Jordan Travis? Well, if Hakeem Williams having a year like that, to go along with Malik Benson and Ja'Kai Douglas and what we think is a better running attack overall, then, yeah, that's going to be a problem offensively, and they're going to be good.
This one, Corey, you know, you like talking about aesthetics, right? Corey, you're a big aesthetics guy these days, symmetry, muscle tone, things of that nature, right?
Absolutely. Why do you ask?
Let's do it, man. Let's fire up the generator, and let's fire up the cameras. And let's generate discussion. Generating discussion sparked by Cummins. Cummins Lifestyle, everybody. What you waiting for? Go visit the Instagram. Follow them. Florida State alums behind the entire Cummins company, pretty much. Not exactly, but we're going to try to get some stock options maybe next year, Corey, when we re-up with them.
Nice.
We'll follow them on Instagram. Best question every week gets featured on this segment, and they get entered into a grand prize run to win a free portable generator or portable power station. Got to be a member, warchant.com, ask the right question, we pick it, we showcase it, then you get entered into the drawing. Our guy, Corey, is named Supio, name's Josh.
Okay.
If you could have one FSU player's body, who would you choose? What if it was just one body part?
Come on, man. What are we doing, Josh?
Be aware you will still need to keep it, or you will end up inadvertently choosing Kelvin Benjamin.
Okay. So, one body part?
Yeah, or the whole physique.
I mean, what about, like, somebody's, like, left arm?
Want Jamie Arnold, like Jamie Arnold's left arm?
I guess he didn't say which sport, did he?
No, he did not.
Huh.
Hence, this will be generating a lot of discussion, we
okay.
hope.
Well, do you have an answer? This has sprung on me. So
I know. I cheated. So if it had to be physique, I'm just going to go pure aesthetics. Like, I'm not going to think about Jamie Arnold's left arm or DJ Uiagalelei's right arm. I'm going to go with Ernie Sims, I think.
Oh, man. You're not going to do a current player?
No. That'd be creepy. I don't want to be 41-year-old dude wants my body.
I feel like it's creepy either way, but yeah, I got you. I feel you. All right, so Ernie Sims, okay.
I mean, I'd be my height.
Yeah.
But like literally with 50 pounds of muscle mass on me, and I'd be able to run like the wind.
Yeah.
And I'd have a jaw like an Adonis. So I'm pretty cool with that.
I guess I would want to be Boris Bojanovsky.
Okay.
Remember him? 7'3".
Yeah.
Can't walk anywhere without people gawking. Kumaji. I would say, honestly, any, like, it's hard to, Greg Jones, Ron Simmons, those dudes are like guys I remember seeing without their shirts on back in the day, and that was ridiculous. Ron Simmons especially, because if y'all go look up Ron Simmons, like, Bobby Bowden interviews him during the Bobby Bowden show when he's like a freshman, or this is like 1977. And Ron Simmons looks like he's been in a Gold's Gym for 20 years. And they didn't have Gold's Gyms back then, Aslan. Like, how did he do it? Like, where did it come from? He looks like what current today bodybuilders want their bodies to look like. And he did it just from push-ups and, I assume, lifting cinder blocks in Warner Robins in the mid-1970s, and he looked like that. So those are my two main ones. But I'll be honest with you, man. Any current defensive back on the team.
Okay.
That's all I'm looking for. 6 foot, 6'1", 185, an 8-pack, because somehow I think all Josh Storms does is have them do, 8-minute abs. That's what they do all. That's their whole workout, is just working on their abs. But these guys without their shirts on, it's just an ab show. It doesn't make sense. So any of the DBs, any of them, name one. I'll say yeah.
Yeah. If this segment's making you uncomfortable, you make me uncomfortable.
Hey, we're secure over here.
Yeah.
We're secure over here.
If I had to pick a current player, man, like maybe Darion Williamson.
Okay.
He's like 6'3", and he's chiseled kind of. So if I had to pick one. Here's the real answer, though. The second, if he could pick one body part.
Yeah.
The answer is Myron Roll and his brain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's making a lot more money in the long term than if he had been a really good NFL football player. His brain is out of control. Did we lose you?
No, I'm here. That was a walk-off, I thought.
Oh, okay. My fault. Yeah, does that count organs? I guess they do. Yeah, Myron Roll's brain is a body part that you would absolutely choose, but I would take, I'll be honest with you, I'd take any part of Myron Roll. He's working with a lot. I'll take anything there. He was blessed with imagine being the number one football player in the country coming out of high school. And whether you can say he lived up to that hype or not, it doesn't matter. He started at Florida State at safety for 2 years under Mickey Andrews, and now he's a neurosurgeon. Yeah. Come on, man. That's not – you hit the lottery. He worked hard, clearly. But those genetics, you're hitting the lottery, man. That's remarkable stuff. That's a good one, Aslan. Timmons, Lawrence Timmons was a freak.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Florida State. There's a million of them.
Now, Greg Jones, that's a good one, too. I might pop up his shirtless photo, like, right there.
Yeah.
Maybe over there.
Kendra, Dan Kendra.
Not a bad one either. Yeah. Not a bad one either. I got Chris Ricks too, man, but that's, now we're getting creepy. Anyhow. All right. We did it. We generated discussion, everybody. Now do your turn. Go to Cummins Lifestyle over on Instagram. It's all one word. Give them a follow. We certainly would appreciate it. They're making us crank out good content, we hope, for you folks on a weekly basis. And you win free gear. Go check them out. Cummins Lifestyle on Instagram. All right, winding things down here on Wake Up War Chant, we go to Old Dad Zanole. If I may ask two questions, because I'll be in Vegas and Atlantic City next week. Cry me a river, right? I watch plays, not players, for the most part, so don't come at me. But what's the deal with Kyle Morlock? I remember him being on the field, but I don't remember him doing anything special, but he sure gets mentioned a lot. Second, I know this isn't Wake Up Bulldogs, but it does affect the Knoll Nation. What is Kirby doing that apparently no one else is regarding developing players? I realize when you pay the best to load your roster, it's easier, but there have been a ton of 4- and 5-star busts over the years, but they seem to be getting it even with constant coaching turnover in development. Aslan, you can only pick one if you'd like to. No worries. We'll do both. The Morlock thing, just, it's a cool story, I guess, right? Like D2, 6'7", we keep thinking that there's some sort of tight end that's going to fit into this offense and unlock something really, really special. And he's got like the build and he's got all the quotes coming from the coaching staff around him. So you feel like now it's his time to step up with Jaheim being gone. But I'm with you. Like Kyle Morlock in terms of like big plays, I nothing jumps to mind. But that's not to say he's not capable of it. But
well, he was a backup tight end last year.
In a really good
backup
offense,
tight ends
though,
yeah. have a. But the, I mean, I guess I'm saying there aren't a lot of backup tight ends that are household names. I wouldn't say he gets mentioned a lot. He's just the starting tight end this year in an offense that uses the tight end a lot. I don't foresee him having the impact that Jaheim Bell would have had if Jaheim Bell was healthy all season last year. Jaheim Bell, Kyle Morlock is not Jaheim Bell. He's not kind of that playmaker type, but he's a 6'6", big body target across the middle of the field. He's a better than, in my opinion, he's a better than average pass catching tight end. And that's all he is right now. He might be awesome. I don't know. Hmm. But for right now, I mean, what is he, 19th, 20th on our top 40? He's not fifth. We don't think he's a star. I don't know if he's an NFL player.
He's 20th.
But I do know he's the starting tight end of Florida State, so he's going to get some mentions, and he's going to have some production as long as he stays healthy.
Morlock, 12th on Matt's ballot, 27th on Jeff's, 20th on Tom's, 21st on yours, 18th on Gene's. 27th on mine, 17th on Ira's.
Yeah, about right, like middle of the pack.
Yeah.
For the top 40.
Right.
I think that comes down to not like we saw some greatness out of him last year, but we saw some production. I think he had 19, 20 catches, something like that, which isn't bad for a backup tight end. And the fact that he's the starter. He's the starter tight end at Florida State, so he's going to be up there somewhere. But no, I don't think he's not Gronk.
Yeah,
he's not Antonio Gates, but he's he's a better than average college tight end in my opinion.
On the Kirby thing, I don't know. Man. I don't know, man. Maybe they were a sleeping giant this whole time, and he's finally unlocked it.
He's a great coach, man. He's awesome. He's an awesome college football coach. He learned from Nick Saban, and he might be better than Nick Saban.
Easy.
I don't know. I mean, he's won two, right?
Yeah.
He's lost twice in 3 years, whatever it's been. Reigning Orange Bowl champs. But no, man, he's a great college football coach, and he's at a juggernaut that was kind of a sleeping giant for a good long while, thanks to Dooley and Goff and Donnan and Richt. But now it's firing on all cylinders right now, and he's getting great players who want to go to the NFL, and he is a great developer of talent. And somehow, it has to be noted, you know, he does get those guys to play really, really hard. It is part of their DNA. It's pretty remarkable how many guys they had play in that Orange Bowl that were going to be draft picks, that were draft picks. He's got something special at that program right now, man. He's at his alma mater. And he ain't going anywhere probably, but he's very, very good. I don't think he's like, I don't know. I don't know what the question is. He's at Georgia. He's an awesome coach. They have a lot of resources. He brings in good, really good talent like Georgia has done forever, and he develops them really well. And there's a lot of competition on the practice field where you have to be awesome to even get into the starting lineup. Look at Marvin Jones Jr. Look at Jermaine Johnson. Like, those guys couldn't even crack the starting lineup at Georgia. And they're really – Jermaine Johnson's a borderline all-pro, and he couldn't start at Georgia. That's the kind of talent Kirby's bringing in.
I know we're pressed on time, but I thought about this the other day, and since this door is kind of ajar, like, what – I get it. Like, Florida State was nowhere near whole. I mean, they were an absolute shell of themselves against Georgia, Corey, but – what Georgia did to Florida State and the Orange Bowl, like, they do that to Mercer, you know?
Right.
And they didn't have Brock Bowers, and they didn't have Amarius Mims, and they took their quarterback out in the third quarter.
I would say, though, and this I'm being honest here, I think that what Florida State put on the field against in Miami in that game was closer to Mercer than it was Florida State. Like, you had – who were your starting linebackers, Cryer and Nicholson? Who were your receivers? Your starting running back was Ja'Kai Douglas. Your starting quarterback was a third-string true freshman. Your DBs were your DB. Like, you had nobody. Your defensive line was who I don't even know who was Edmund and Byron Turner.
Yeah, like that's about right. Yeah.
That's not what Florida State is, and Florida State is not
know.
To that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I guess I'm saying like they made Florida State look like Mercer, but you know Florida State the talented players that Florida State played in that game were so young, they might as well have been Mercer juniors. Like they couldn't compete. Clearly, I mean the score said that, our eyeballs said that, but yes, it was remarkable. Georgia has more talent from top to bottom, clearly. Like, Georgia 1-85 was superior, much superior to Florida State 1-85. That was evident. 1-22, pretty darn close. 1-85, not close at all. And it was basically a testament of Georgia, the back half of their roster, the second part of their depth chart versus Florida State's is a no contest. And that played out in that game that we'll never talk about again.
And the thing is, loss in the snub was the fact that, you know, Georgia kind of got hosed too. Not nearly as much as Florida State did, obviously, but it goes to like Kirby's motivational tactics and just the way that he gets those guys to play hard. Like they were so angry, and unfortunately, Florida State had to be the team across the field from them, but. Yeah, they're and things. I don't think they're being talked about nearly as much like Ohio State. Ohio State's like the preseason darling right now. That's probably going to be bulletin board stuff for Kirby to make them play like a bunch of rabid madmen.
I mean, they always do anyway, Aslan. It doesn't matter, and it doesn't matter if they somehow stumble and lose three games this year. They'll be in the playoffs. Yeah. So Georgia and Ohio State are locked and loaded.
You see how Urban said that might be the most talented team Ohio State's ever had? Like trying to angle for that job in case Ryan Day chokes
right.
it away?
That's right.
Last one, random underscore John. Good morning, guys. I'm coming from New York.
Okay.
It's hot up here. Feels like Florida. It's kind of crazy. Anyway, our athletic director seems to be hitting home runs with every coaching hire. When it comes to replacing Coach Leonard Hamilton at the end of the season, who will be the slam dunk hire? Who are the insiders telling you it might be? If you were making the hire, who would you choose and why? Back to eating my way through this town and working. Take care and go Noles.
I feel like Random John asks us basketball questions a lot.
He does, man. Yeah,
which I love, man. I truly appreciate that. That's not sarcasm. I do. Aslan, you got any ideas? I mean,
probably
Luke
not
Louts.
Sam Cassell. I don't know. Sam Cassell is going to walk away after his fourth NBA ring. He'd be like, all right, next mountain to climb.
Well, so I wonder – I was wondering because the Pistons fired their head coach
Williams.
Out of nowhere. Yeah. Only out of nowhere because he still had a lot of years left on his contract. It was his first year.
Tons of money he got paid to take that job.
So I wonder if Sam Cassell would now that he's won a championship as an assistant coach, would he be somebody they look at? I think Sam Cassell is a bit of a pipe dream only because I just think he's ready to be an NBA head coach.
Oh, yeah.
And who in the world would choose to be a college head coach? Number one, he's an NBA guy. He's been in the NBA now. Guys, he's been in the NBA now for 30 years. He was at Florida State for 18 months, and he's been in the NBA for 30 years. He won a world championship with the Rockets in 1994. So the NBA is his life. I would be very surprised if he was if he just keeps having to be an assistant in the NBA and there's no hope that he ever becomes a head coach for some reason, then yeah, I definitely think you make the call, but I just don't know how feasible that would be. I think he's going to be an NBA head coach here soon, hopefully sooner rather than later. He's waited long enough. So, I mean, Luke Louts is a guy, he's on the Sacramento Kings staff. I think he's somebody you would definitely be, you'd interview. He also has a passion for the program that you know he has a passion for the program. And then you know, it's guys around the country, it's smaller programs. But I have no inside intel about who exactly they're going to be going after. I don't think there's somebody locked and loaded and ready to go. And for all we know, they're going to announce that Hamilton gets a 3-year extension. No idea. That would be surprising. Maybe Jameer Watkins gets to be a player coach. Maybe that was part of his deal to come back. Who knows?
Did Andy Enfield take the job at SMU to like just help his family get acclimated to a big cross-country move by doing it like in pieces?
There you go. Like, 1 year in Dallas. Yeah. Hey, guys, we're going to finish the drill. We're going to go to Tallahassee. Well, he wanted to get acclimated to the ACC.
Yeah, that too.
So you get 1 year at SMU, and then you go back to Tallahassee. Like, that'd be a guy that, you know, you could do worse for sure than infield. I know he kind of fizzled out there at USC, but he's certainly accrued talent. And he's been to the tournament. He's done some good things. So I guess he'd be on – I mean, I feel like you'd rather coach at FSU than SMU, right?
I would think so. But I don't know, his wife's a model. Maybe she'd rather live in Dallas than
– I mean, that was a while ago. I don't know that she's still modeling. Not that older women in their 40s, or I assume she's might be in her 50s now, aren't models, but can't model. But I don't know that that's something she still does full-time anymore.
She's 48, but I think you've lived a certain lifestyle. There's things to do in Dallas that probably aren't able, like a Top Golf. I think she's probably a big Top Golf gal.
Probably Top Golf. Yep, that's true. Maybe one of those Mario Andretti race facilities. Yeah, that's true, Aslan. That's a good point. And Tallahassee does not have that. Tallahassee has Corner Pocket.
We do.
But they don't have a Top Golf.
Do you go? I think like you push and go all in if the guy from USF, Amir Abdulrahim, like if he has another good year and actually gets them to the tournament, like that. I feel like everybody was like, "Why don't they just go after him?" And it's like, "Well, it's just been 1 year, so me personally being kind of a bit of a risk averse guy."
Well, 2 years because he had done the same with Kennesaw State, right? I think he was at Kennesaw State and got them to the tournament. They almost either they pulled off an upset or almost pulled off an upset in the NCAA tournament last year. 2 years ago, whatever it is. So, yeah, if he could get to the USF to the tournament in year two again, then that's not a fluke, right? That's right. A guy that – now, that doesn't guarantee any type of success at Florida State. But, yes, he's also on your radar too. But then you wonder, okay, is he holding out for Kentucky? Mm. Is Florida State really in his plans, or is he waiting for Indiana to open up? Is he waiting for North Carolina to open up again or one of these other big blue blood programs? Has he out-coached Florida State to so to speak? So yeah, no, to answer your question, Random John, we have not answered your question.
What about CY?
We have no idea. Sure, but you know, Missouri has to do better than going winless in the SEC like they did last year, which I think they will, because apparently they had a huge recruiting haul and a portal haul. But I think CY is somebody you would think about. I love that when Florida State wins a baseball national championship, and they are going to win one, folks, it will be the Mike Martin tree that wins it. It is not Mike Martin's son that will be winning it, but it is somebody that grew up watching Mike Martin's teams and playing for Mike Martin, coached with Mike Martin. That gives me joy that it will still – Mike Martin will be a part of it. I would be really cool if Florida State – gets somebody that has Leonard Hamilton ties. He's not obviously as accomplished as Mike Martin was in baseball. That would be neat, but it's certainly not a prerequisite when it comes to this hire. Just go get a guy that's going to win you some games and get in the tournament. But it would be neat if it was a CY or a Laux or a Cassell who has Florida State ties. That would be cool too.
All right, we're done.
We did it.
We did do it. Happy birthday to Brady Clark. Thanks for listening, everybody. Jeff Cameron Show, 1 to 3 o'clock. Plenty going on over at warchant.com. Big recruiting week ongoing. Stay connected to warchant.com, premium recruiting board. When we come back and hang out on Monday, we'll try to get either Michael Langston or Matt Lasser on to sum everything up. But if you're a member of warchant.com, you'll know about all of it well before then, because it'll be happening over on the PRB. For Corey, I'm Aslan. Thanks for listening to Wake Up War Chant, presented by Vitamin Energy.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.